This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, welcome to it, my friends. It is Tuesday. The phone number here, 888-900-9966. Always welcoming your common sense. Several things have been I've been gone for a few days, so, you know, there's a lot going on. You know, and here's the thing. There's so much going on. Again, you look at it and go, where do you start? Where do you start with all of this? Here close to home, chronic wasting disease. Chronic wasting disease, I'm right at ground zero myself. I'm going to be talking about this and what's going on. A rolling video on it, doing some documentary work on it, doing some work for the Outdoor Channel on television. On chronic wasting disease, Ivy and I both involved with that process. But the sharpshooters are out in Meridian Township in Ingham County, where that infected deer was found in May. Make no mistake, they can put it as nicely as they want. The fact of the matter is, I believe, they will eradicate the deer herd in Meridian Township and work out in concentric circles. If need be, they're going to work out in concentric circles. If need be, if they find another deer, they'll push that circle out 10 or 15 miles. And unfortunately, that encompasses, I mean, it already encompasses my hunting property already in that zone. So I lose on this deal. The sad thing for me about chronic wasting disease in Michigan, first of all, you have to take it seriously. Otherwise, there'll never be another hunting season in Michigan. This will be the end of it if you don't get it under control. In Madison, Wisconsin, they took out 25,000 deer. It's been 6-7 years ago now. They took out 25,000 deer, and they've never allowed them to come back because these prions, this protein, lives in the ground. It's akin to mad cow disease in the deer herd. And it doesn't go away like a bacteria or a virus. It's just there. So when these plants reproduce, if the plants are there and the chronic wasting disease is in the soil, then it comes back. It formates right there. Then it becomes this circle of death, I suppose. And the chronic wasting disease causes small pinholes in the brain. It's just very devastating, to say the least. So we'll be focusing on that. First, let's jump on the phone lines, though. Jim is on the line in Grand Rapids waiting patiently. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good morning. First of all, I'm a conservative guy through and through, but my roots are from Chicago, so I know a little bit about voting in that area.
Yeah.
But earlier you were talking about the 60 election with Kennedy and Nixon, and what Chicago did to hold back the electoral votes for Illinois, or the overall vote, which gave me electoral votes.
Right, because all the ballots from Southern Illinois had to be, you know, sent up, trucked up to Chicago where they were counted. So that was the delay, allegedly. And then they declared that Kennedy had won Illinois, and therefore the election, and the ballots were burned post-haste. Go on.
Yeah, well, but the difference would be if you had taken Illinois' 27 electoral votes away from Kennedy and gave them to Nixon, Kennedy would have had 276 and Nixon 246. Kennedy still would have had it had he not won Illinois. My point.
I got you. Well, I'd have to go back and check that, because my understanding was that Kennedy would have lost the election, and you know, it's not something we'd take a close look at because it's a long time ago, and it's like arguing about a game that was already determined.
I couldn't remember him. I knew that if you took Illinois and gave him to Nixon, he still lost, but the raw numbers were 537 total, and Kennedy ended up with 276 versus 246 for Nixon. And again, if you flip those 27 votes, Kennedy still would have won the thing.
Right, we'll take a look at that. And I appreciate you checking in. And you know what? I can be held to account. I appreciate that, Jim.
If you'd like a little bit about how they vote in Chicago, I can tell you about my ex-father-in-law's voting days, if you'd like to hear.
Sure, go ahead. Why not? How did they do that?
First of all, he was tied in very close with the Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley machine, and his two henchmen in the city council, Ed Fifilski and Tom Keene, were father-in-law's good buddies. he on election days, he hated election days because he'd have to leave the house before sunup, and he had a list of precincts all around Chicago he'd have to stop at and what name to vote in each one of them. And that went on every election for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And that's just one guy in Chicago.
Let me ask you, Jim, how do you feel about voter ID and so forth when it comes to going to the polling place?
There's only one reason the Democrats are against it, and that's because they do this kind of hanky-pank they do in Chicago all over the country. A photo ID is the simplest thing for anyone to acquire.
Yeah, and
but
if you can't get one,
tooth and nail, because they know they cheat and cheat and cheat on voting days.
Yeah, and if you can't get one, every state in America will get you one free of charge. They won't make you pay for it if they don't believe you can afford it. And
exactly,
there you have it.
But they make it sound like people are too stupid to go out and get those free cards.
Well,
but they're not stupid enough to go out and get other benefits, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, people are too stupid. You know, there's something in there, something about people being too stupid. We'll figure out the right place to apply it, Jim. Thank you so much.
Okay.
There you have it. Jim checking in from Grand Rapids today. We're going to get back to this whole thing in just about 40 minutes on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the whole mess involved there. And the fact that it's all secret and behind closed doors. But first, this just crossing the wires from the Detroit Free Press today. Nearly 5 years after his failed bid for governor, former state treasurer and House Speaker Andy Dillon still not balancing his books for his gubernatorial campaign committee. And the Secretary of State's office is now investigating possible civil violations related to an excess campaign contribution. The Secretary of State's office refusing to release certain records to the Free Press requested under the Michigan Freedom of Information Act about its contact with Dillon's committee, saying the records are exempt from disclosure because they were gathered in pursuit of law enforcement. Those will come out, by the way. Fred Woodhams, a spokesman for the Secretary of State's office, said the internal investigation relates to a campaign contribution that may have exceeded the legal limits. He would not provide details, but said the investigation is ongoing. Asked on Friday why the investigation is taking so long, he said staff is conducting a thorough review of the legal issues involved here. This story has been going on since August 2013. Dillon, of course, a regular contributor on this program, former Democratic House Speaker, served as state treasurer under Republican Governor Rick Snyder for a bit as well. The newspaper reported that Dillon and his campaign treasurer wanted to close the fund used for Dillon's 2010 campaign, but state officials wouldn't sign off on the closure because the fund was in disarray, with more than $100,000 not accounted for. Disarray is not a good term you want to hear when dealing with people like the state officials. As state treasurer, Dillon oversaw tens of billions of dollars, of course, in state funds and investments, as well as financial accounting for Michigan cities. So this could, you know, this continues to linger on, and for Andy Dillon, will keep an eye on this. But if it keeps hanging around, well, it's not probably not good news, I would say, you know, just trying to get it cleared up. Still ahead today, we're going to speak with Roger Curtis, straight ahead, the president of Michigan's International Speedway, talking about the new safety updates there and all things going on, new events, new excitement, all going on at MIS. And a bit later, Liz Peek from Fox News will be here. No one like Hillary. There's just no one like her. We'll talk about that straight ahead on the Steve Gruber Show. It is Monday. Welcome to it.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
After the hour on this Monday, welcome to it. Try this on for size. Nestled in the lush Irish hills of southeastern Michigan, Michigan International Speedway is NASCAR's fastest track and the Great Escape, a venerable NASCAR national park where fans can get away and enjoy the very best in racing and camaraderie. It's the love of racing and the thrill of a great time for race fans and drivers alike. It's not bad, huh? I'm proud of myself for that. Hey, joining us now, of course, Roger Curtis, the president of Michigan International Speedway. How was that, Roger?
I think I'm hiring you to do our voices for the commercials next year.
Yeah, well, there
amazing.
You go. Yeah,
I'm ready to buy a ticket now.
See, you should be. You know, you got a big event. Of course, it's shaping up as maybe your best year ever at MIS, and a lot of excitement. The deck here, though, the thing that I'm hearing about, you've got this special platform, this deck for NASCAR action and music and all sorts of things going on. You've got a big event coming up this weekend. As they say, bring me up to speed.
Wow, you're loaded today.
See?
That's great. Way to go. No, we're really excited for this weekend, Quicken Loans 400 race weekend, and we've done a lot to try and attract new fans, millennials who maybe don't know as much about NASCAR as some of us more experienced avid fans, and still take care of those folks too, and trying to be a little bit of everything to everyone. And the deck is one of the things that we came up with. It is a beautiful deck. It literally is the concourse of an old grandstand that we took down, and it's magnificent over there, and it oversees the entire track. So we thought, what a great way to turn that into a big party deck. And we've got DJs from all over the state of Michigan, some very well-known electric dance music DJs going to come in. I know it sounds crazy playing music during the race, but they're going to be there throwing a party while the race is going on, and fans can go up there and just check it out. And your pass to the deck also includes the opportunity to go to our music festival that's happening right behind there.
Really?
Friday and Saturday, called Calora. So it's just, we've really turned it, we've always said it was a party. It was kind of a self-made party by the fans, and now we're really playing host and throwing a big party.
Now it's a multi-dimensional, you know, go here, do some dancing, watch the cars, go to the music festival. Of course, this is on turn three at this platform. Now, so this is a three-day access ticket. I mean, it gets you all over the place, and it's $75. It's $25 a day. What a bargain.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal. I mean, I think it's fantastic to be able to get up there, and it's not your grandstand seat, but, you know, it's like the deck in Comerica Park. People will just stand out there, grab a beer, visit with friends, hang out, and we kind of took that concept, but with a little higher energy with all the music that we're going to be playing. And you're right, $75 for 3 days. Parking is free. Now, if you want to add on camping, we changed one of our campgrounds just for, you know, to kind of fit into this party atmosphere. Quiet hours are usually midnight. This one will be 3 a.m. So we're going to let the party go a little bit longer in there. We'll have some DJs over in there, too. That's the M50 Creekside Campground. So just, you know, we've noticed that the millennials maybe aren't as attuned to NASCAR as previous generations. So it's something that we really wanted to work on here, because there's so many of them moving into our state. I mean, what Dan Gilbert and Grand Rapids and other areas are doing, it's great news for Michigan. But we need to do something to connect with them besides just the traditional, hey, Jeff Gordon's coming to town.
Right. It's time. Well, and I think that, well, you know, whoever's in your marketing department, you guys got some young people, and they're saying, hey, what if we did this? And I bet the first time that some of the folks said, hey, let's have a dance party at the race, someone kind of looked at them sideways going, I'm sorry, you said what?
You know, all of this actually started last July at a round table like that with our team, and we all jumped on it immediately and said, this is great, because we've seen it with faster horses.
Sure.
That brings out the 20-somethings, the young kids. It brings out other people, too, but a good majority of them are in their 20s, and we've seen the connection that they have to music. But we have nothing going on the track. They're literally standing on the track waiting on a tram to take them to the main stage area. This way, we're trying to incorporate some of those elements into a race weekend, so there's at least the exposure to NASCAR if they choose to. Have that. They can maybe learn a little bit more. Some will get hooked, some won't, but some will.
And why I've got you mentioned it, but you know, I want to make sure that people realize that, like I said, it's probably on your way to the best year ever at MIS for a variety of reasons. You've made it safer, you've made it bigger, you've created things like the deck. You've also got, of course, faster horses and a big schedule still ahead. So what else is, tell us about faster horses for anybody who's been living in a cave for the last couple of years and doesn't know what it is. Go ahead and share.
It is a three-day country music festival that we've partnered with Live Nation. It has grown exponentially each year. We're well on our way. We're actually going to have more, Steve, they're going to be amazed by this. We're going to have more campers at Faster Horses than we'll have at NASCAR. We've sold out of camping. We're well on our way to selling out. We'll probably have 100,000 people there. Headliners are Florida Georgia Line, Brad Paisley, Carrie Underwood. But, you know, the rest of the afternoons and early evenings aren't bad either, with Frankie Ballard, Lee Bryce, Tracy Lawrence, Lone Star, Dustin Lynch, Justin Moore, Ray Lynn, Thomas Rhett, Dwight Yoakam, many, many, many others. So it's a heck of a lineup, and that's another party, too. I think that's what we do. We just throw parties here.
And I think that's I think Dwight Yoakam, by the way, is perfect. I think he's absolutely perfect. I think he's one of the greatest. I think he's legendary, by the way. It just sticks out to me. So 100,000 people, and camping has already sold out. I mean, that speaks to itself. I mean, you've got tremendous amounts of camping opportunities. Does that mean you're going to have to expand for next year?
Yeah, we've already sat down and talked about expanding the concert footprint itself, as well as maybe some camping, and hopefully Calora, the music festival on our NASCAR weekends, will continue to expand as well. The buzz on that right off the bat has been fantastic. Ticket sales for this weekend, the Quicken Loans 400 is up about 4 or 5%. I think that's going to hold. It looks like we've got a really good forecast for Sunday, so pretty
perfect.
Excited. That's what you look for, you know, you dread the 10-day forecast. You want it to get here and so you can see what people are going to see, but so much can change. But it looks good right now. It looks like we're going to have good weather this weekend. So it's going to be an awesome time out there. Coach D'Antonio from Michigan State will be our grand marshal. Already met him, talked to him. He is so excited to meet the drivers and hang out with them and drive the pace car. So should be a lot of fun.
There you go. Roger Curtis, real quickly before we go, what's the website to buy tickets?
MISpeedway.com or 800-354-1010. Thanks, Steve.
There you have it. Thank you. Roger Curtis, everybody, the president of Michigan International Speedway. Big event on the way. And you see Coach D'Antonio driving fast out there on the pace car as well. 25 after the hour on a Monday.
This is the Steve Gruber Show, bringing you the news and newsmakers that affect you most.
Monday and welcome to it, 33 after the hour, the Steve Gruber Show. New polling reflecting concerns in the Clinton campaign, to say the least. Scott Walker polling well against the former First Lady and Secretary of State, as is Jeb Bush, as are others, and it's a bit of a shock, I would say, to the Democratic elite who think, well, she's just going to walk her way in there. I don't think so, and I've said for a long time, I don't believe she's going to get the nomination. I may be on an island of one, but I'm going to live with it. I'm going to stick with my prediction. I've been saying it for a long time. But Jeb Bush also not polling well. These two very popular people, as far as name recognition go, unpopular when it comes to the voters. Liz Peek, a columnist for FoxNews.com and the Fiscal Times, joining us this morning, a regular contributor. Liz, welcome back, of course.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, are we just tired of these people? Are we tired? I mean, are we tired of their names? Because Jeb Bush, I just saw him. I hosted an event with Jeb Bush, a Lincoln Day dinner here a week and a half ago. You know what? He was very well spoken. He had a great message. He did retail politics quite well. Maybe not as well as Scott Walker and some others, but, you know, he shook the hands. He did what he needed to do. What's going on here?
I think that Jeb Bush is a terrific fellow. He's smart. He's analytical. I think he lacks fire in the belly, and that sounds sort of stupid, but you have to, as a campaigner, really grab people's attention and their emotion. I don't think he has much emotional pull. The opposite would be Marco Rubio, who cannot fail to move a crowd. Chris Christie excites his listeners. I don't think Jeb really has that capability. But beyond that, you know, yes, I think the nation is tired of Bushes and Clintons. There is a feeling that these two individuals, and I think this is sort of unfair in Jeb Bush's case, but that they're sort of an entitled duo, that they're sort of walking into this because of their name recognition. I think this particularly hurts Hillary Clinton because we all know, including a lot of Democrats that I've spoken to in the last couple of weeks, that she is a really flawed candidate. And I don't mean that she's had some hard knocks along the campaign trail. I mean, she's a deeply dishonest person. And, you know, they roll their eyes when they talk about the weekend papers were full of Democrats kind of arguing how they were just going to hold their noses and jump because Hillary was the person. Come on, how can you get excited about a candidate?
You can't. So let me just clarify there, Liz. I just want to make sure I understood what you said there. Democrats accept and admit, which is a strange way to put it, admit that she's deeply dishonest.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. So, I mean, in fact, there were a couple of editorials in the New York Times this weekend saying, yes, they understand that she's compromised, that, you know, the foundation, the email stuff, it's all true. It isn't going away. But who else is there? I have to say, I think the most interesting thing going on in this election is there aren't any other Democrats. Where are the young 45, 50-year-old Democrats who really are wowing the country with personality and message and so forth.
Well, what would your message be? What would your message be? You're a 45-year-old Democrat. You're excited. What are you going to sell them? Baltimore? Well, you're going to sell them Cleveland? You're going to sell them Detroit? what are you going to sell them?
I think that's a really good point. And today in the New York Times front page, there's a long article about states having fiscal problems, and they're sort of trying to tag. They're trying to make this out to be a Republican problem. Yeah, Republicans do have this problem. Why? Because they have, generally speaking, inherited enormous fiscal problems in the states and cities that Republicans now manage. I mean, when you're totally right. When you think about, for example, Malloy in Connecticut just endorsed Hillary Clinton this weekend, and one of the earliest people to do so. Okay, so what, you know, what's about Malloy? Is he a candidate? No, because his state is in dire straits. Rahm Emanuel in Chicago? I don't think so.
It's a mess.
Yeah, I mean, so it is interesting. And, you know, there are, of course, some of these states, like Kansas, are having fiscal issues, and they're blaming Brownback, and they're going to be, you know, on the case of Republican managers, governors and mayors and so forth as much as they can. But the reality is those problems didn't come from nowhere. They mainly came from all these public pension funds and so forth that people like Christie and like Walker have made their chops by trying to confront. So,
well, these unfunded liabilities, which plague Michigan as well, $75 billion in debt is our state. And you know, this is a common theme across the country. And you mentioned Sam Brownback. So let me go back to the governor of Kansas real quickly. Okay, so they just made an idea that you have to limit how much money you can get out of the ATM if you're on welfare to $25 a day. I don't think you're going to get much pushback there or anywhere else, because he also said you can't spend the money in casinos, you can't spend the money, you know, at the beach and other places. And other people have this other idea going back to, I remember when I was a kid, you couldn't go use, you know, food stamp money or whatever to go buy beer and so forth. Well, you certainly can if you get cash. So yeah. There's a big pushback about getting cash at all. If you have food stamps and housing assistance, okay, but giving cold hard cash out of an ATM, no, a lot of people don't like that. And I don't think it's going to be a winning position or issue for the Democrats.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, we've had these periods before, notably under Bill Clinton, where welfare reform really took on sort of an important, became an important idea. And I think we could get there again, certainly if the economy continues to sort of stumble along. And by the way, one good jobs report does not mean that this economy has certainly all suddenly caught fire.
No.
You know, states are really struggling. People are going to begin to wake up and say, wait a minute, why are my roads such a mess? Why don't we have enough cops on the beat, et cetera? And the answer is, because their public employees have negotiated over the years with corrupt politicians enormous benefits that are basically sucking towns and states dry. This is a message that kind of gets lost and then comes back, but the truth is it's increasingly a problem. And as the accounting world has made this more of an issue that people have to acknowledge these costs, you know, it's actually
more
visible.
How are you
going to
pay? I mean, here's the deal. Everybody knows what happened. And by and large, Democratic politicians made deals with Democratic union leaders
for
these bloated contracts and special deals so they would turn out the election next time around and next time around and next time. Well, sooner or later, you had to pay somebody. Of course, they didn't concern themselves with that. Now, talking about dirty politics, we don't have a lot of time here, Liz. But this whole Trans-Pacific Partnership, all this secrecy, all of this backdoor nonsense, basically Congress surrendering their rights to the executive branch, if you trust what Jeff Sessions has to say, and I think that he's done a pretty thorough job. And for people like Boehner that apparently haven't even read this, they talk about dirty politics. You know, the guys that complain about Obamacare not being read are not reading this and supporting it. I'm concerned, and what is going on?
Well, I think obviously this is another major initiative out of the Obama administration, but it is one that is backed largely by the corporate community. You know, most people who run businesses do want expanded trade, and there are things in this bill that are very helpful to American corporations trying to export. Liz Warren obviously has raised some questions about the legal aspects of it. Obviously, there are a lot of American workers who are very concerned about jobs that might be lost. I favor expanded trade generally. I think the more you get government's side.
No, I agree with you there, but you know, at some point, you know, for example, we've had two congressmen on here in the last week saying, well, we don't want to label where your state comes from because it'll you know, put be a trade barrier. I'm like, I'd like to know if my steak comes from Kansas or Cambodia. I think I deserve to know, you know, the difference anyhow, Liz.
Well, I think that's realistic, and hopefully the interests of the American people will come first. They don't always come first in this administration. I think that's the most worrisome thing of all.
Fair and true. Liz Peek, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks
always
for having me. Bye now.
There you have it. Liz Peek from FoxNews.com and the Fiscal Times. Back in a moment on the Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show. Jump starting your day with the news that matters.
You're pushing too hard, you're pushing on me. You're pushing too hard on what you want it to be.
It's 45 after the hour. You know, sometimes I just like, you know, when I take off into the woods of Manitoba, which Ivy and I did here for the past week or 10 days. It's quiet out there. There's sanity out there. And most of the time, there's no cell service, which I greatly appreciate from time to time. So I don't intend to spend much time on the subject of Bruce Jenner. And yes, I intend to continue to call him Bruce on the rare occasions he will cross the newswire here. Bruce Jenner is a man, period. And I cannot figure out for the life of me why we spend so much time debating this foolishness. I can assure you, the day that Mr. Jenner dies, he will become an autopsy. He will receive an autopsy just like the rest of us. There will be a telling medical question of fact on the form being filled out by the medical examiner, and that question, of course, will focus on gender. The doctor will, of course, fill out the form in the legally required way. Let me focus on that. The legally required way. The doctor will fill that form out and identify Jenner as a man, which, of course, he is. So why are we being politicians, Hollywood, and the news media, working so very hard to convince everyone else that men are actually women if they think so, and women are men if they feel that way? If that is the case, then maybe we should fill out these reports differently. Tell coroners that they can fill in anything they'd like. Fill in anything you'd like on the form, depending on how they feel that day. I mean, no big deal, right? Just doesn't matter. The truth is, words matter, and using them correctly really matter, and identifying men as women and vice versa is perfectly dishonest and, well, inaccurate. I also believe it is damaging to the fragile remains of the American family. The family, of course, has been considered trite and pedestrian in the eyes of the ever more aggressive forces of the left. The family itself has been under attack for decades now. We're also told that marriage, or how it's defined, has no real meaning, and I'm here to tell you that it does. Bruce Jenner does not need to be held up as a hero. He should be looked at as a case study of what we are willing to give up. How much are you willing to surrender? Are you willing to give up all common sense and common decency as well? And while we're on it seems to me the word hero is thrown around way too easily these days. According to Webster's Dictionary, the word hero is as follows. This is from Webster's. A man of distinguished courage or ability, admired for his brave deeds and noble qualities. Or number two, a person who, in the opinion of others, has heroic qualities or has performed a heroic act and is regarded as a model or ideal. He was a local hero when he saved the drowning child, is the example. He was a local hero when he saved the drowning child. Well, it seems to me that we are drowning in a sense of self as a nation. Our collective common sense needs to come up for air as well. By definition, I do not think Bruce Jenner's battle over who he is or what he is heroic. His exploits in the Olympics were certainly heroic, but he is now a tragic figure to me, not a hero. By the way, before you start sending letters and comments, you should know that as of today, because it's never changed, the World Health Organization still classifies transgenderism, or the belief that you're another gender, as a mental disorder. The World Health Organization believes you should be treated professionally for such thoughts. I believe the World Health Organization, maybe you'd be more comfortable with Dr. Paul McHugh, the former psychiatrist in chief for Johns Hopkins University Hospital and its current distinguished service professor of psychiatry. McHugh says, in plain English, that transgenderism is a mental disorder that merits treatment and that sex change is, quote, biologically impossible. Biologically impossible. In the end, I certainly hope that Mr. Jenner will find out whatever it is he's looking for. But, you know, don't subject us to your situation. It is Bruce. You can call yourself whatever you want. But at the end of the day, you are a man. And whether you like it or not, it's the biological, scientific, and simple fact. So if we could, let's just skip the nonsense. Okay? Let's just skip the nonsense. See, if I sit in those trees too long, I consider all these topics, you know, and I sit, that's, again, the nice thing about sitting in the trees with no cell service is you have the opportunity to think a lot. And I had an opportunity to read a couple of books, three, in fact, and left alone to my own devices, the idea to explore some of these things. Coming up at the top of the hour, I'm going to discuss in further detail more about truth. Something that is, you know, far too easily put to the side in America these days. The truth. The simple black and white truth. Here it is. Like I said about being under the knife at an autopsy. The simple truth is you're either a man or you're a woman. This is scientific black and white fact. And yet in today's world of politics and political correctness, there's so much shading and blurring of lines. Well, my friends, where is that getting us? If we just blurred the lines on the roads that we drive on, would that be okay too? No, because you'd cross the center line. You'd have a collision. You'd leave the road and hit the ditch. Clear lines matter. Clear guidelines matter. Where we're driving matters. Where we're thinking matters. And how we think matters. And when we talk about things and we discuss things, words matter. And how we say things to each other matter. And being clear is important. Being clear is very important. And using words correctly is important. Calling all things by their correct name is extremely important. Also, accountability, my friends. The phone number here is 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. It's Monday. I'm back, by the way. Alex put it this way. You just can't fake Gruber. I happen to believe that. You just can't fake Gruber. It's the real thing, the genuine article, the Steve Gruber Show on a Monday.